content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The February issue of Our State Magazine features articles all about the things we love, starting out with the comfort foods we love. First up, though, is the welcome message entitled, By Bread Alone, by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. Frigid winter mornings take me back to my high school days when I slept too late and had to bolt out of the house, leaving behind a bleak prospect of a bowl of cold frosted flakes, and grabbing instead my book bag and car keys and jumping into my Nissan Sentra, shivering as the heater sputtered. Instead of driving directly to school, as I should have, I'd veer in the opposite direction toward town, drawn to the drive-thru at the biscuit company, where I'd roll down my window and speak my order into the icy air. In just minutes, I'd be back on the road, one hand on the wheel, the other clutching a buttery, savory, salty country ham biscuit, its crinkly wrapper spread across my lap as a makeshift napkin, doing its best to catch the crumbs. I'd miss homeroom, but I'd slide into my desk just in time for first period AP English. That biscuit long gone, but its warmth carrying me through the hour. To this day, I'm convinced that my love for literature is linked to those cold morning detours, a biscuit in hand, a stack of books on the passenger seat. My senior year readings, The Catcher in the Rye, Lord of the Flies, Beowulf, I can still rattle off its prologue, were fueled by those breakfasts, by the biscuits that hushed my rumbling stomach and eased me into the day. My grandmother made fine biscuits, but hers were different. They were softer, delicate, meant for butter or a dab of jelly, much too tender to hold up to country ham or sausage, and certainly not meant to be eaten on the go. In North Carolina, we have restaurants devoted to barbecue, with pitmasters perfecting their craft like artists. But biscuits spots hold their own, too. I've waited in a line that stretched down Goldsboro Street at Flo's Kitchen in Wilson for a cathead biscuit. You need two hands for that one. And I've swung through Sunrise Biscuit Kitchen in Chapel Hill for a bacon, egg, and cheese. I still marvel at the decadent jam bar at Biscuit Head in Asheville. And I am even a little bit embarrassed to admit that barely half hour after leaving Asheville, I've stopped at Blue Ridge Biscuit Company in Black Mountain for a round two. I'm not. For all my travels across this state, every corner of North Carolina, every one of its counties, the search for a good biscuit remains one of my most satisfying quests. In 1978, when Biscuitville opened its bright yellow building in Asheboro, my grandfather, ever curious, took my grandmother and me to try it. I still remember my first order, a chicken biscuit, and how the three of us settled into a booth near the front, sunlight angling in through the wide windows, warming our faces. That morning marked the start of a Saturday tradition that held for as long as my grandfather was alive, one that taught me something lasting about food. It's more than hunger answered. It's comfort and connection, a taste of place and shared moments, of memories made in the company of people we love. And now I'll take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay, which is entitled Better Together, and which explores our favorite culinary pairings. Prepare to have your appetite whetted. When it comes to matches made in the kitchen, North Carolinians believe in soulmates. From breakfast to dessert, dig into a few of our favorite pairings. Biscuits and country ham. A.B. Vinoy Hams in West Jefferson has used an 8-month slow cure process, part science, part Mother Nature, they say, for 9 decades. The ham takes the salt, which is mixed with brown sugar and hand-rubbed into the meat. Once sliced and sandwiched between 2 flaky halves of a scratch-made buttermilk biscuit, well, that's the cure for just about anything. And on this we have a picture of 2 stacked country ham and biscuits. And the biscuits, of course, are golden brown, and the ham is pink and looks tender. And it says here, North Carolinians can always find a time and place for pork. Country ham is all about comfort. Baptisms, weddings, funerals, and all the occasions in between. Our next pairing is barbecue and slaw. And this might be a little bit controversial, so hold on for that. Eastern or Lexington style? We like what we like, right? No matter where allegiances lie, we can all agree that the rich smokiness of Q is best balanced by coleslaw. Lexington style requires its red version, made from a tangy blend of cabbage, vinegar, ketchup, and spices. White slaw traditionally tops Eastern-style barbecue sandwiches, adding a creamy mayonnaise-based crunch. Whichever you choose, one thing's for certain, you're going to need extra napkins. So the Lexington style is pictured here on the left, and it shows the red slaw tops sandwiches at the Barbecue Center, the oldest barbecue establishment in downtown Lexington that still cooks over pits. And it's more of a pulled pork, it looks like, from the photograph, with a tender bun there. And looking at the other side, Eastern style. So White Swan Barbecue in Smithfield has been serving customers since 1930. Its white coleslaw complements the pork shoulder and butts traditionally used for Eastern style barbecue. And this barbecue appears to be a little bit more finely chopped than the Lexington style. All right, next up is cobbler and ice cream. Maggie Valley's Cataluchi Ranch wraps up its Wednesday evening cookouts with a high country seasonal cobbler, meaning it's always high time for this baked fruit dish. Plop a big old scoop of homemade ice cream on top for a melty sweet balance to the tart pucker pop of ripe berries. And it looks like this is in a cast iron pan, maybe not a skillet, but a cast iron pan with two handles on each side. And it's a mixed berry. Looks like it's even got some cinnamon sticks on top in the photograph from Chattahoochee Ranch. As the seasons turn across our state, apples or peaches, cherries or berries may make up that hot fruit filling in our own deep dish pans. And, of course, the buttery golden crust making way for the fruit beneath, the fruit and sugar and sort of a little bit of a sauce, and then the ice cream on top. Next up is chicken and dumplings versus chicken and pastry. Maybe another controversial topic, I don't know. The sign in front of the Dipper in Ashboro will tell you this classic comfort dish is a specialty. Line up at the counter on Mondays when thick, savory broth and juicy chunks of chicken enhance the puffy, biscuit-like pillow dumplings in a decidedly southern take on a hearty chicken soup. And this is pictured with the chicken and dumplings, of course, in a bowl served with a spoon like soup. And it looks like there's another plate nearby with a bowl of nicely cooked green beans and some mashed potatoes and gravy. So then there's chicken and pastry. If it's Monday in Ashboro, the Dipper's serving up chicken and dumplings on the other page. On Wednesdays in Washington, you'll find chicken pastry on the menu at King Chicken Drive-In. So in eastern North Carolina, chicken and pastry, or more fondly known as chicken pastry, is a different take on dough. For this dish, rather than dropping dollops of dough, cooks roll out the flour mixture into thin, wide strips, which are then sliced into diamonds or rectangles. Mixed with tender, shredded chicken, the starchy stew can be found on mainstays at King Chicken Drive-In in Washington and Ruth's Kitchen in Wilmington. And they look very similar, but the chicken and dumplings, the dumplings are a little more rounded, like they're described as being more puffy and biscuit-like, where you see the strips in the chicken pastry, in the other chicken pastry, of course. All right. Now, I'm not familiar with this, so, and I'm native North Carolinian, but liver mush and eggs. In Western North Carolina, liver mush, a combination of pork, cornmeal, and spices, is considered as much of a breakfast staple as bacon. So rise and shine at Shelby Cafe in Cleveland County, where the locals know how to order this dish of the same name. Egg sunny side up with liver mush, please. Opened in 1922, the restaurant serves breakfast all day. And while you could sop up your yolks with bacon, bologna, or sausage, when in Shelby, the liver mush is a must. And here we have a nice breakfast platter with two nicely cooked sunny side up eggs, and a bowl of grits with dripping with butter, a slice of liver mush that looks like it's nicely browned, and a biscuit on the side. And, of course, the requisite salt and pepper close by. Ah, now this is a favorite, shrimp and grits. While the other Carolina, the one further south, has claims to its origin, when it comes to shrimp and grits, we're the state that made the dish acclaimed. Credit is due to the late chef Bill Neal, who in the 1980s crafted the Lowcountry specialty for Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill. At Moselle's in Winston-Salem, cheese grits level up with shrimp, serrano ham, sweet peppers, and a sherry cream sauce. Riffs on the classic shrimp and grits recipe keep it fresh, whether spices or gravies, tomato cream or cheese, bacon or sausage. And we have a picture of, this is from Moselle's in Winston-Salem, and the sweet bell peppers in there, and the base of grits, and some parsley sprinkled, and the nicely cooked shrimp. It looks good enough to eat, as my daddy would say. All right, next up is mac and cheese. The gooey combo of pasta and cheese satisfies the young and young at heart, and frankly, everyone. At Poole's Diner in Raleigh, Chef Ashley Christensen dishes up the best-selling macaroni au gratin, a blend of three bubbly cheeses broiled with a satisfying crust. A modern diner with reimagined comfort food, Poole's was named after one of Raleigh's first restaurants. And that mac and cheese does look good enough to eat there. It's baked in a crock, and with more cheese sprinkled on top, and it's oozing over the sides and onto the sides of the crock, and it has a nice golden brown crust. And that does look pretty delightful. All right, now we turn to fried flounder and hush puppies. You know what to expect from a fish camp. A casual setting, a bustling kitchen, and a variety of platters featuring fried catch like flounder. There are sides too, of course, most likely slaw and some form of potato, whether baked or fried. But ask anyone what they eat first, and they're bound to say the hush puppies. Typically fried in the same oil as the entrees, these dense cornmeal delicacies steal the show. Since 1968, Twin Tops Fish Camp in Gastonia has served up fried fish and oblong hush puppies. And here we have the picture of the fried flounders curled up nicely golden brown over a bed of French fries that looked nice and crispy. And then, of course, the hush puppies, and I see some tartar sauce and lemon and some crackers. And there's a hand holding a hush puppy about ready to eat it from Twin Tops Fish Camp in Gastonia. All right. And next is, I think this is actually last, is collards and black-eyed peas. And rich in history and abundantly grown, collards and black-eyed peas can be found all across our state. Representing money and luck when eaten on New Year's Day, the year-round southern pairing of collards and black-eyed peas, likely to be on any meat and three menu, brings out the mild and earthy flavors of both. Prosperity may not be guaranteed, but when seasoned with thick-cut bacon, onion, vinegar, or garlic, they make it easy to eat your vegetables. And here we have a cast-iron skillet with load of collard greens, chopped collard greens, with sprinkled with bacon, and got some the juices in there. And then we have a pot of a crock of a bowl of black-eyed peas that with their juices as well. Both of those look pretty tasty. Oh, and yes, we have this too. We're not at the end yet. Cornbread and buttermilk. This bedtime snack made in a glass, not a bowl, can be a cup of comfort before a long winter's nap. Never ones to waste, North Carolinians raised on this regional treat crumble the remains of their suppertime cornbread, warmed up is even better, then top it with a few glugs of milk. Buttermilk is traditional, but whole milk is a sweet swap. Cornbread made from stone ground meal from the old mill of Guilford soaks up buttermilk from Homeland Creamery to form a comforting snack, sometimes called crumble in. And the Homeland Creamery is in Julian, hometown creamery. And of course, you've got to cook your cornbread in a cast iron skillet to make it the best. And we see a slice of cornbread with a nice golden crust. It looks like it's got a little bit of salt sprinkled on, a little kosher salt sprinkled on top. And that wraps up our last of the comfort foods. Another favorite thing in this issue of comfort and things that we love, a cup of kindness. At his roastery in Boone, the founder of Bald Guy Brew brings together neighbors from across Watauga County and does a good turn for coffee growers around the world. The man they call Bald Guy steps up to the machine he lovingly describes as the Cadillac and pours in a bag of Guatemalan coffee beans, all of them green as lima beans, precious as little pearls. These beauties roll down the hopper into the belly of his coffee roaster, where they bounce around, gradually turning brown, filling the room with a rich, cozy aroma. This is where the magic happens, Bald Guy says, priming his nostrils. He tugs a tiny handle on the side of the Cadillac, which is now approaching 400 degrees, and pulls out a sample of roasted beans. He's looking for its historical thumbprint of smell and flavor, quotes, ascertained through the smoke like a wine aficionado swirling a glass of Pinot. And with this batch, he's found it, just like he does every morning at Bald Guy Brew. In a few minutes, the discerning coffee drinkers of Boone will show up to buy his beans by the bag. Welcome to my coffee-verse, he says, taking a sip as the twang of a John Lee Hooker blues song plays over the speakers in his roastery. My chairs are old-school chairs, $2 apiece. Sit down and meet somebody. That there's actually an eclectic mix of feng shui. I don't know how that happened. Bald Guy Brew in East Boone is the creation of Don Cox, the 60-year-old proprietor with a life story as nuanced and surprising as his mountain espresso. On the side of old U.S. Highway 421 near a hill frequently visited by deer, he constructed a rustic roastery in what used to house the Hollering Green Produce Company. There's a front patio built from the beds of two tractor trailers, sipping tables fashioned from whiskey barrels and natural edge slab wood, and his hillbilly chandelier handmade from scrap metal. His coffee beans arrive in 150-pound sacks straight from the hands that grew them, all green, all shade-grown, and all fair trade, organic or Rainforest Alliance certified, an earth-friendly jolt of caffeine down to the biodegradable cups. It almost seems criminal to taint it with cream, as longtime customer Isaac Church can confirm. I love black coffee, Church says, sipping one at his laptop. It's just unapologetically simple. It's a way of savoring life. Cox knows his customers' preferences so well, he can steer them toward blends he knows they'll like. I'll order one and Don will tell me, no, you don't want that one today. To understand Cox's devotion to this craft, you have to follow his story back to Heidelberg, Germany, where life included his mother, father, and his mother was a no-nonsense woman, and a schoolmaster grandfather. Among his early memories, the one that stands out is visiting his great aunt in Yugoslavia. In a house with a dirt floor and a hole in the roof to let the smoke out, she sat over a fire stirring coffee beans as they roasted in a copper pot. He still has the spoon she used. Along the way to Bald Guy Brew, Cox studied at Appalachian State University just down the road. He also worked for a time as a chimney sweep, cleaning up the fireplace at the home of noted mountain storyteller Ray Hicks. He points this out as friends relax in his roastery, and the story somehow adds flavor to his already potent Java. Cox may blend with the locals, but his path to coffee wizardry winds around the globe, from Rwanda, Mexico, and back. By the early 1990s, he had migrated to Pittsburgh to study for the Anglican ministry, but he kept stumbling into a coffee-flavored world. He first encountered green coffee beans in Pittsburgh's historic strip district. Encouraged, he bought a bag and fired up his skillet. "Smoked up the house," he says, wincing at the memory. "No one tells you that." In preparation to work with the ministry in Mexico, Cox studied Spanish at a language school near Mexico City. On his way to class each day, he stopped at a coffee shop where he was introduced to Americano. On several occasions, he had the opportunity to go through coffee country, La Huasteca Veracruzana, while traveling up the mountain for his work in San Luis Potosi. They had a saying down there, he recalls, "La taza habla, the cup speaks. If the last sip impresses the person who's drinking it, you'll have a repeat customer." A few years after that, Cox found himself in Rwanda with genocide survivors who worked in the coffee lands. But his calling as a bean roaster emerged a bit later, back with the ministry in Pittsburgh, where he modified his roasting technique by using a popcorn popper. "Took to it kind of like a duck to water," he brags. While Cox was living in one of Pittsburgh's rougher neighborhoods, his neighbor, the principal at a local junior high school, asked if he would roast coffee for the PTA to sell as a fundraiser. Bikes for Beans. Proceeds from the sale went toward buying bicycles for students as an incentive to keep a B average throughout the school year. The neighborhood kids gave him the nickname Bald Guy, which stuck as firmly as his new hobby. An ordained Anglican minister, Cox would likely still be working in the church, but he slipped one day in 2004 and hit his head on a concrete floor, suffering a traumatic brain injury. Lengthy periods of reading and study were no longer possible, and it turned out that the 10 to 18 minutes it takes to roast coffee was about as long as he could concentrate at the time. "Whatever my hand falls to do, I do to the glory of God," he says, "but I don't run Christianity up the flagpole to sell coffee, because specialty coffee, properly roasted, sells itself. La taza habla, the cup speaks." The mountains ultimately called Cox back roughly 18 years ago, this time with a wife and two sons. At his wife's suggestion, he launched his new life as an Appalachian coffee virtuoso from the back of a souped-up Mercedes van, showing up at whatever farmers markets and old-time music festivals he could find. At one such event, Cox reunited with a client from his chimney sweep days, Ray Hicks, who regularly spun his yarns on festival stages. "It's hard to roast coffee in a van when it's raining," Cox says. He winces again, recalling how the vehicle filled with smoke and made it hard to breathe. His fans, however, remember those early days with fondness and rattle them off inside his roastery while sipping a cup. Like the time Cox was invited to a meeting of zoologists and paleontologists at Appalachian State. He arrived with Lucille, his much smaller roaster, in tow, and poured his concoction for a room full of academics from around the world, somehow pairing black coffee with pulled pork and a string band. "The Italians were impressed with Don's espresso," says Steve Hagman, App State paleontologist and Ball Guide regular. "Every customer Ball Guy Brew becomes one of Don's friends. You can't separate the two." After nearly two decades, Cox is a near-constant presence around Boone, found not only in the roastery, but in a second location in Blowing Rock. Fans buy his bags of organic espresso, Guatemalan, Costa Rican, or Swiss water decaf online and pick them up at the roastery, or they sit and enjoy a cappuccino while a Charlie Pride song plays over the speakers. Bald Guy Coffee even turns up when you're not looking for it, on the menu at Blowing Rock Bistro Roca, on the cocktail list at Story Street Grill, and in beer at several local breweries. Sorry about that. When Hurricane Helene struck in late September, Cox stayed busy roasting coffee for relief stations around Watauga County. Even with his parking lot mostly washed away, he kept brewing, worried about neighbors in isolated hollers, nervous about the coming snow, hopeful that attention will not fade from his beloved mountains. He jokes that if specialty coffee doesn't pan out, he can always go fishing. The beauty of longevity, he says, is you don't get spooked. But he needn't worry anyway. People crowd in for coffee roasted and brewed by an old hand they know personally, someone who walks on the same boon dirt they do, and who considers every cup a sort of manifesto. So many people have ideas for what they want to do, but they don't know how to dress it up and put shoes on it, Cox says. I want you to have an exciting interaction with a cup of coffee. How cool is that? I'm helping people do good. A Bald Guy Brew is located at 714 Old U.S. 421 South in Boone, North Carolina. And you can check out their website. They also have a location in Blowing Rock on Main Street. And you can check out their information at baldguybrew.com. And there's a couple of pictures I'll cover here. There's a picture of one of his bag of coffees, a certain morning blend of coffee. And there's the paleontologist, Steve Hageman, and one of the professors they mentioned in the story are sitting at a table chatting with Cox. And there's a picture of the roasting process, the picture of the green beans, which do actually have a hint of green with them. And then the roasted beans shown that sort of a chocolatey brown color. It shows the outside, the front, the Bald Guy Brew. The inside, there's a mismatch of different tables and chairs and benches and things like that. It just looks like a very comfortable, laid-back place to be. And then he has a picture of a cup of coffee with a nice foamy top with a little design in that, a little sort of wheat design. And there's one more picture with him with the Cadillac, as he calls it, the roaster, pouring the beans out into the pan to sort them. And picture of a latte over there. Well, that's going to do it for us today. This is... we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and is readily available on a podcast from our website. If you have questions, give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long till next time.